Hello, and welcome to Microsoft IT Showcase. I'm Jim Adams, Senior Business Program Manager with the Showcase team, and today we're going to discuss Microsoft's Azure Cloud, and specifically how Microsoft IT is managing its move to the cloud. We're fortunate to have with us today Lyle Dodge, Senior Program Manager with Microsoft IT. Welcome to the webcast.
Thanks, Jim.
We encourage you to ask questions for Lyle through your Skype Q&A window. We'll address your questions as they come in, or we'll hold them until our Q&A session toward the end of the broadcast. And finally, watch your chat window for content that's related to the topic. So Lyle, can you start us off with your role at Microsoft IT and what you plan to talk about today?
So my name is Lyle Dodge. I essentially work in the central hosting organization within Microsoft IT. We are a classic hoster, so we provide services for IT and non-IT alike with inside Microsoft. We are essentially kind of resellers of the Azure platform, and we also have other private data centers. I work on an Azure strategy team where we look kind of act as a CTO to the internal hosting organization, and also we help all of our partners migrate to the cloud. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about why we're moving to the cloud, and then I'll talk about our approach to adoption of the public cloud and also some hybrid cloud scenarios. And then how we operationalize the cloud. How do we secure, do governance, all of those kind of fun things around it. And then really how are we doing subscriptions, security, networking, and all of those other types of things. And lastly, we'll talk a little bit about the changes that have gone on in our organization. That's people, process, all of the other fun things.
Great. Start out with, so there's infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, that's IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS. Which one is Microsoft IT using?
Yep. So we'll have a great slide later on that kind of lays out our rubric, but essentially it's all of them.
Okay.
And so for example, when you mentioned SaaS, our job is to, when we look at SharePoint servers on-premise, CRM on-premise, anything where Microsoft has a SaaS offering, we try and de-customize those and migrate all of our applications that are built on those to Microsoft SaaS offerings. Any net new applications that we're trying to build inside of Microsoft, we try to go as far as possible towards PaaS type services. So we try and migrate to those things that are automatically have scale up, scale out built into them in our leverage native cloud capabilities like Azure Active Directory. And then especially for those sustained engineering applications where we may be sunsetting them, we'll migrate those up to the infrastructure as a service and potentially connect those over an express route or an MPLS VPN connection. And so we use all of them today. And we still have some footprint that's left on-premise. And so those are maybe for technical reasons, which likely all of our technical reasons for being on-prem are going to be gone within the next 6 to 12 months. And then some of them are legal reasons. For example, there are some geos where we can't use, Azure doesn't have a public cloud presence, but we have some customers, so we have to do something in country that's not in the Azure public cloud. But over the next few years, most of those will, my gut says, will go away because we're expanding at a rapid pace.
So the goal is to get as close to 100% in the cloud as possible.
Yep. Our goal is, you know, the vision is always 100%. Today, I think we have most of our non-production in the cloud. And within a few short months, I think we'll have almost all of our non-production in the cloud. We'll have a good chunk of our production in the cloud. My gut says within the next year, we'll be 95 or higher percent of our production and non-production in the cloud. It's very achievable, especially how fast the Azure product group is releasing things. So when enterprise IT may be blocked, us and other customers on a specific scenario, they're amazing at how fast their cadence is and how quickly they release things. So
how fast is fast?
Well, over the last 6 months, the Azure product group released over 2,000 changes, and a good number of those removed all of the blockers that we had for enterprise adoption, some specific scenarios. So just the Azure product group itself, they use us as kind of a sounding board for other enterprise partners along with other major customers, and they've switched over to a DevOps model, and the sheer speed at which they release now is just phenomenal for us, because if we have a blocker today, we know it's a blocker that's only temporary.
Great.
So some other reasons why we're moving our portfolios to the cloud. I think the obviously we have this desire for operational efficiency to save costs wherever we can. We have this desire for more innovative ways to engage customers. But for me, what I've seen is the greatest desire is how fast we can go. We can go test things out, tear it down. If it wasn't the right way, we may have only blown a few hundred hours of compute versus going and buying servers and storage and all of these other things. Agility, really a great key scenario of this in IT is we've seen some of our volume licensing in our e-commerce programs where they do have this natural spike at quarter fiscal end or other seasonalities. They've migrated their stuff a long time ago to public cloud. And for them, it's this ability to, instead of release every quarter or every month, to be able to release multiple times per day to capture market share and capture changes in how they want to do things.
So they're much more responsive and agile.
Much more responsive. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have this great desire for all of these other things, but I think the desire to go faster and try things out and fail, and knowingly try multiple things out and knowing that many of them will fail, but at least we've learned and we've been mm-hmm. able to do that quickly, is to me the greatest driver that I've seen.
And that's also driven a culture change, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's I'd say I joined Microsoft a little over 2 years ago, and I'd say it's been a lot of fun to see what's been happening. All of the product groups switched over to agile development methodologies, and they release quite a bit more often. We have a slide later on that we'll talk kind of on the discipline changes. Our dev, test, QA, engineer, software engineer, support, everybody is kind of operating in the same environment now. So we can go from, planning to design to testing a minimum viable product to having that released. And everybody's in the same system working the same way. And IT has just, has adopted the same methodologies as the rest of the product group. So it's been a lot of fun. Another example of that is everybody in Microsoft IT now is in the same Visual Studio Online instance. And so now we can plan blockers and in business functions from the application owners that have business requirements all the way back to our security and networking teams that may be doing infrastructure things or security controls. But the application teams up front can take dependencies on all the things along the way and really see, if I want to migrate this big line of business application, what are the long poles in the tent? Mm-hmm. And how do we, at the leadership levels, address those long poles in the tent so that way we can look back upstream and unblock all of these applications?
Certainly keeps your stakeholders in the loop, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely does.
All right.
So if we look at our adoption approach, and especially how we look at which applications kind of go first, go next, there are a number of things that we look at. We have, obviously, business factors. Some of those things may be those regulatory, I can't put it in the cloud yet, or I have to have it in this geo. And then most of them are technical factors, and does this have a high bandwidth connection requirement to a back-end server on-premise that doesn't make sense to move until we've moved that associated data island or data anchor? And so we go through this entire thing when we look at our applications. And I think, to me, it's similar to when we went from all physical environments to virtual environments, we had a chance to look at application rationalization. Now when we're in the same inflection point in the business of migrating our stuff from on-premise virtualized to potentially the cloud, we have this great point in time to say, of our application portfolio, how do we modernize it? Which pieces do we look at dropping off the map and using a SaaS offering? And so really we've gone through our entire application portfolio saying, which are our easier applications, not too complicated? Which applications may be not very complicated, but they have ingress and egress points to 200 other systems internal on-premise? And mm-hmm. so how do we essentially go through and map those and say, these are the easy ones, let's migrate those now, and then let's look at these applications later?
We've got a question from online. It's an interesting question, and it's a good clarification of what we do and don't do. So here's the question. Are you involved at all with the Microsoft operations handling Hotmail and Xbox Live, etc.? And the second part of the question is, roughly how many applications are owned, supported by MSIT, Microsoft IT, and how many of them are in Azure Dev Test, and how many in Azure Production Now? This will be, that's an interesting question there.
Yeah, one question that kind of fettered out to many.
Yeah.
It's a really great clarification point. So Microsoft IT runs the line of business applications for the company. We do not run so Xbox runs their own. For example, Office 365 is run by the Office 365 product group. And so we run the line of business applications. Some of those applications may have customer-facing pieces or B2B-facing pieces, such as volume licensing, sales. Some of our e-commerce stuff is customer-facing. We also run some other large CRM, and you know, we also run SAP. And so we run all of the line of business applications that the company uses to then the field uses our applications to sell. HR, finance, legal, all of those applications are run by IT. But the main SaaS offerings that customers buy, CRM online, SharePoint online, Exchange online, all of those are run by the product groups and not IT. Also, Azure runs their own stuff. IT does not run any part of Azure.
All right. And the final part of this question was, will this be recorded and available for future reference? And the answer is absolutely.
Absolutely.
It will be.
I've already had a few people say, hey, you know, my customers and I want to watch this, but it's 3 a.m. my time zone,
please
don't make me.
We'll have a link at the end, but it is Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. So,
and as far as kind of the other question that was asking about what are we doing today and what kind of percentage?
Sure.
We're well over 50% of our non-production footprint is in Azure today. I don't know what the number is for production, but we have. We have internal goals that say by the end of our fiscal year coming up, which is the end of June, our goal is to have all non-production in the cloud. And a similar goal is where our goal is to have all of production in the cloud by the end of next year. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not a truth teller. I can't tell you if we're going to hit those targets, but I can tell you the trajectory that we're at to hit those targets, we're tracking very well to it. And I think we'll actually be ahead of that target for our non-production. I think we're doing a really good job on that.
I know that in the SaaS space for Office 365, or SharePoint and Exchange, we're at pretty close to 97% of all of our SharePoint sites and Exchange assets are in Office 365 in the cloud, with 3% remaining on premises for the purposes of testing, dog fooding, and things like that.
Exactly. Especially when we have scenarios where we're talking to another large enterprise or the product group may have something that they want to replicate with a large enterprise customer, we keep those things around on premise. Like you said, they're very small, but we want to keep those around for other customer scenarios.
Okay.
Like you're spot on. So when we kind of expanding on the adoption approach and how we've done things, we kind of started out, if you look a few years ago, we had old IT. We had lots of physical and virtual servers on premise, not really in the cloud. And then we've migrated really to a hybrid cloud approach. And so when we look at our application portfolio, we say, you know, application X, Y, and Z. And if those are sustained engineering applications, meaning typically the business doesn't have the funds to go re-architect and re-implement an application, we would say, hey, if you can de-customize that and go to a SaaS offering, that's the preferred approach. Or if we can de-customize that and go to a third-party partner SaaS offering that also, you know, uses Azure, that's also a great approach. Mm-hmm. And then if the application owners and business owners have funds to do some re-architecture, then obviously we help them along and try and get them over to PaaS if we can. Get them over to PaaS, leveraging Azure Active Directory for all authentication. That also flows down to things like SQL Azure, where you can have contained users and databases, so you can secure the head server for SQL Azure on IP address ranges for your corporate networks. And then you can use Azure Active Directory to secure all of your users in the databases down to row-level security. And so a lot of our applications that are typical enterprise applications of the typical web database, you know, those kinds of things migrate very well. Mm-hmm. And then those applications where they may not have the funding year over year because money's a finite resource. And if this is something that's been running and I have plans to sunset it in the next 2 to 3 to 5 years, that's a great candidate to migrate to infrastructure as a service. And when we do that, we leverage our system center data on-premise to essentially say, hey, what's the 95th percentile of CPU, RAM, and disk usage on this? And then we use that as a baseline when we migrate it up to Azure. So we're not taking these servers that are, you know, 2, 3, 4 generations old of processor, where people would say, well, I've got a 64-core, 128-gig RAM server, and our data says, yes, you're using a good chunk of your CPU, you're not using much of your memory. Mm-hmm. It's sitting there in SQL caches, but you're not really using it. You may be using most of your RAM, but that's a 95th percentile of a 4-generation-old server, and we're migrating you to the Azure DV2 series.
State-of-the-art.
State-of-the-art, and so we'll essentially do, you know, benchmark on those and say, hey, we're going to migrate, when we migrate, help you migrate up, we're going to right-size you. So when you're running in the cloud, your 95th percentile usage is going to be around 60-70%, and we know we're optimizing the cost out of the migration. And so that's really important that we do that and that customers do that. System Center provides a really nice data set for us to go look at that. There are also a number of third-party tools that are useful in doing that kind of right-sizing optimization as well. And then what's left is really those workloads that can't go. You know, maybe some of these workloads would be, I need physical dongles attached because it's some media rendering application that is written by a third party and they have some special requirement. For the most part, those have gone, mm-hmm. but we also know there are other scenarios, especially in our devices unit, where they need to plug in devices into some of these applications and workloads, and they need to have something on the network. So those will be left, but I don't think they're very few and far between. And we also, if we kind of look at our adoption approach on the next slide, we've taken a top-down, bottom-up, and an opportunistic. We've said, if you want compute in Microsoft, if you want to build a new line of business application, or if you want to redo and you want to kind of modernize an application or get something net new, you really have to justify why that's not going to exist in the cloud. And so it's a really hard discussion for teams that, you know, may not want to modernize or may, you know, I'm used to on-premise, I'm used to my servers, don't take my servers away from me. It's harder for that group, but the vast majority of our people are like, let's go, and so we look at, okay, there may be something where we're pushing, let's say, 2 terabytes of data a day in ingress and egress. Okay, well, that's an engineering issue. We're a company full of engineers. Usually we can figure it out pretty quickly, mm-hmm. or know somebody that's migrated something like that. So we have this top-down, use the cloud unless you can show me that it can't go in the cloud.
Right.
And so we take that, you know, SaaS, and then from there. And then we also take this bottom up. When we've looked at, you know, data center migrations and some of our data center exits, we've said, well, we have a few thousand servers in that data center. Let's use the data to show which servers are great candidates for squeezing down and moving up. And, you know, how do we take this footprint of this many servers, you know, and shut a bunch of them down and move
sure.
them up? And then we also have this great opportunistic. Our engineering teams are really state-of-the-art, and if we're doing a lot of continuous deployment from VSO now, and we're doing a lot of great things in IT. And so we say, hey, I'm building this app, or I need to migrate this. Oh, Service Fabric just came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect use case for my thing, so boom, let's go build it.
It's a great segue into the next question that we got from online. How is Microsoft keeping up with daily changes? Can anyone know what is happening and or how things work when change happens so often?
Yeah, so hopefully that person can kind of clarify a bit. So when we talk about multiple changes here, we monitor and manage everything. So when things change in our environments, we know. But I will say, just like any other, if you're speaking more of the how do we keep up to date with changes in Azure, we're all technologists, and so I think that's one of the nice things that we have is we all read the Azure blog feeds, we all see what's coming out in preview. There are a few newsletters out there that are really fantastic for those people that may not want to keep daily tabs on what's changing. There are a few great newsletters and also the Azure blog on MSDN to say, hey, go to it a couple times a week or once a week and see, hey, what's changed in the last week. And so My team, we do that, and essentially every once a week we'll say, hey, what's come out from the Azure product group? What's gone into preview? And as far as I'm concerned, when we see things go into preview, we start building line of business applications on top of them, because we know within a few months we'll be done, and it will likely be out of preview. And so we're very, you know, some people call it dog food. I like to call it, we're kind of customer zero. So mm-hmm. When things go into preview, we start building big applications on them, and then we're part of preview programs. So we just go reach out to the product group and say, hey, you may be missing this for the enterprise, or, you know, we're using this.
It's a great feedback loop, isn't it?
It's a great feedback loop. And so they get this great rich feedback mm-hmm. loop that they get from other enterprises. And so we're looking at right now some of our major line of business applications, even though Service Fabric just came out. That's perfect. That solves a lot of my architecture needs. I don't have to go to the same things I had to do, where I have to go build out an external cache or an external queue mechanism. It's just there.
It helps to be agile, doesn't it?
It definitely helps to be agile. Even so much so that, you know, we've had applications where they've migrated from waterfall to agile, and even through the process they're saying, we're going to build out this application this way, and halfway through the build out they said, well, we're halfway through the build out of this web using, you know, caching, using all these great things, and Service Fabric came out. It may take us, you know, a week to kind of redo the architecture mm-hmm. a bit, but it's worth it.
Yep. Erase a little bit of it and rewrite.
Yep. We're a month or two away from release, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. We can handle that, and we can go to something new that will help us down the road, and we'll have less complexity and other things, and easier time managing and things like that.
Great.
When we look at kind of the traditional, we've had to close a number of data centers in the last few years, and our approach is to close as many as we can to get up to the public cloud and then keep only a few special purpose around. If you look at, you know, kind of this is the operating, what you're seeing here is kind of like the operating system view approach of our footprint. So, hey, how many OSs do I have and what can I use? We've found that when we look at things, we can retire, right size, and eliminate about 30% of that portfolio.
Wow.
And a lot of this may be, environments where we're doing sustained engineering, they don't need 5 environments anymore. And when things are up and running, and they're in a data center and they're on-premise, they tend to just be left running.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of
low
scrutiny.
Utilization.
Yeah, there's hey, this is maybe a sustained engineering, so I don't want to go spend my time on that.
Right.
But now that we're closing out a data center, we realize, hey, let's go close off those other environments and leave it. We're also actively right-sizing stuff that comes from on-prem to stay on-prem, that stays on-prem for the next few years. And so we're right-sizing those, optimizing databases, optimizing throughput patterns. And then we also see a number of, like you said earlier, we're roughly 97%-ish on SharePoint Online and CRM Online. We have got a lot of those applications where we've been able to kind of upconvert those to SaaS offerings and mm-hmm. just take our hands off of the hosting part of it
right.
and just, and now let's focus our engineers towards building something new on top of it.
Yep.
And then we have a myriad of other things that we kind of talked about earlier. If we can convert it to an Azure PaaS, it's fantastic. We have a lot of really great innovation in some of these areas where, for example, we had, our supply chain organization had a bunch of web servers that they needed to kind of condense down, and they wanted to migrate those to Azure, but they had a number of systems that they had to integrate with backend on-premise that required, you know, Kerberos and Windows integration. And so they did this really innovative thing where they kind of built a farm of IaaS web servers over an express route circuit, and we're able to get most of the benefits of the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, but then we're also to get those Kerberos hops back on premise. And so we've done a number of things like that. Apologies, I need to grab a drink of water.
No problem.
And so we've done a number of these things. And then last really is the HVA, PKI, and other things where we just can't move them. So
we have another question here. Has Microsoft IT used the new services such as Cortana Analytics Event Hub Stream Analytics, Azure Data Lake, Data Catalog, and Azure Functions.
Okay. So yes to all of those.
Okay.
A lot of our security and network teams are really excited about using, they're already using Cortana. And so this allows them to kind of augment third-party or in-house security things to say, let's learn, let's use machine learning, let's use analytics to see new patterns that maybe we're not used to yet, but are abnormalities. Our e-commerce teams are also using those kinds of things. So we're definitely using the machine learning, and our bill says that we're using the machine learning to a good extent. As far as event hubs and things like that, they really ingest events at scale. We've already migrated and are migrating a lot of our applications where, for example, teams will use Visual Studio Application Insights. Mm-hmm. You can pump those events to event hubs. And so this allows us to essentially say, hey, across our application portfolio and across all of our applications that are running, it'd be a great idea if we could just ingest those millions of events an hour through event hubs and do machine learning on top of that, do pub sub and all those other great things. So we're using both of those. we're also starting to use the Azure Data Lake quite a bit too. And so especially some of our data anchors that we migrate up are multiple terabytes and very large. We're starting to leverage that as well. Azure Functions I haven't seen yet. I haven't seen anybody using that. Could probably find that out for the next webcast.
Sure. All right.
And I can't remember if there was another technology in there.
I think we've got them covered. Yeah. Upstream Analytics, Cortana Analytics.
Yep. When we kind of transitioning a bit more to, that was kind of how we looked at things, transitioning more a bit to how we operationalize a lot of the stuff that we do. Today we manage for, on behalf of Microsoft IT, over 1,000 Azure subscriptions. We're looking at changing that down, and so I think in about a year we'll be down to a few hundred as we consolidate. But we've kind of flipped traditional IT on its head, and we've said the teams that are developing applications and the DevOps owners and these Agile teams that are going, they're allowed to have as much power on the Azure subscriptions as they need. And so it's quite a bit different from the traditional model that when we started out, we started building out virtual machines and IaaS on shared Azure subscriptions. And then when our teams, our customer teams would come to us and say, that's great, you've built me a VM in Azure, but I have no access to the underlying Azure subscription, so I can't go fast. You've essentially given me a VM on-prem in the cloud. Mm-hmm. You haven't helped me. And so now we essentially have a subscription model where we look at, there's a subscription per application or per service, however you want to look at that. If you have a service line, so for example, sales is a service line. They have many applications within sales. Each of those applications has an Azure subscription. And those DevOps leads that manage that may have co-admin or contributor on that subscription. They may have near as many rights as we do. But what we've started to do is say, we don't want to get in your way. We have roughly 2,000-ish applications in IT, the last number I saw about a month ago. And our job is to really get out of the way of all these application teams that are trying to migrate to the cloud. There's no way we can migrate 2,000 applications if every single one of them has to go through a supply chain us to get there. And so we've said application teams have power of subscriptions. They can go do things. And so they can go self-service provision in Azure. Our job as the IT organization has been to get out of the way and really provide guardrails. And so when we look at how we strategically think about Azure and Azure subscriptions, we let them go fast, but then we put the guardrails in place. You know, and this is kind of looking at how we operationalize our subscriptions. We have multi-factor authentication for everything that you're doing in Azure. Mm-hmm. So that's turned on. So people can't go to the portal or do stuff in PowerShell without a multi-factor authentication. We also leverage role-based access control, and we inspect our footprint. So we go and look at, hey, does this subscription have 20 co-admins on it? Let's go talk to that person and make mm-hmm. sure that they understand security implications of having 20 people on it. Ideally, all of our teams have migrated to our finishing off migrations to using Azure Resource Manager. This ARM RBAC model allows a much finer grained control around security so that way they can have you know, a co-admin that's the lead for that team, and then maybe everybody else is using full RBAC on ARM, and they can't even see other people's resources, and they're doing dev, test, prod, and everything in one Azure subscription. And we really try and leverage the public Power BI tools, you know, Azure Security Center, OMS, and there are a couple of really nice public Power BI tools around daily usage and things like that, and cost, that we kind of expect our DevOps leads in the morning as part of their daily stand-up. What did my team do in the last 24 hours?
Speaking of cost, got a question here. How are you dealing with the finance end of this, and who pays the bill? Yep. You know, it seems like Microsoft is paying Microsoft this funny money back and forth.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
Yeah, there's always funny money within an enterprise. So what we've done, so if you can imagine, you know, you and I, and we have a few other people in the room, let's say I'm the CIO and you're the hosting person. What we did is we took all of the budget for each of the application owners, and we swept the public and private cloud budgets into you. And then I essentially, as a CIO, said, hey, you're responsible for our cost containment. And so it did a few really nice things here. Teams that are supposed to be focused on their core, building applications and doing things, were able to shed some of their context of, hey, I'm going to go fight over a $5,000 cross charge this month because I think it was $4,500.
Mm-hmm.
We got rid of a lot of that. And when we swept the budget over, we essentially switched to a showback model.
Kind of like managed care.
Yeah. So okay. we showed, you know, you show each team how much are you spending. You were supposed to be within this envelope. Did you go above or below? If you went below, that's awesome. How'd you do that? If you went above, what happened? Mm-hmm. Were you building a new application and I okayed you for that? That's great. If you didn't, you know, hey, I see you went above your envelope and you went under in utilization. Can you please fix that for next month so we don't have to have a Carter conversation at the end of the
year?
Okay. And it gets teams back to really developing stuff. And then also, since all of the cost is in yours, you have the financial incentive to go and like maybe hire and you know, do some tools and automation. You have an incentive to go look at, hey, of our entire footprint, it'd be great if you could produce a Power BI report that an application owner in HR, finance, or another application unit could go look at this Power BI report and say, hey, these give me some recommendations on how I can save money and right size, or give me some a PowerShell, Azure Automation PowerShell snippet to go shut off my non-production environments from at 4 p.m. and turn it back on at 8 a.m. You know, if I'm not fully switched over to the DevTest
lab. How do you incentivize the engineers to do that? It seems like we're a culture of hoarders. We get assets and we tend to keep them close at hand, even though we may be using them at 2% capacity.
So transparency is king here. And so if you look at this and you say, hey, if anyone in IT can go look at everybody's server utilization and in what they're running in their environments and how much it's costing them, transparency is just king there. So it's and then it becomes not a, you know, you blew a bunch of money, Jim, and I'm mad at you. It's, hey, you know, I see you're having issues with this. I know this other team that had issues with that, or I had issues with that. Here's how I did it. Or maybe I haven't fixed it yet. Maybe we could go do that together and go look good to the boss.
Interesting.
And so it's definitely a culture change. And a lot of our monthly meetings now, we kind of try and get rid of the ability for people to twist stories or tell PowerPoints, and we say, hey, what's our Power BI dashboard? Let's bring that up and let's run our meeting this for the next hour off of the data. Can we speak to the data? Have we vetted to make sure the data is great? If there's a data gap, that's okay. Let's go try and close it for the next month. And so kind of coming back to how we've operationalized the cloud a bit, you know, if you look at kind of how we did things in pre-cloud, everything was kind of focused on the perimeter. Once you're within my data center, you have unfettered access, things are great, you're within this building, you can hop around between servers, we may have some DM, some virtual LANs and things like that. But it was really focused on perimeter security. So we spent a lot of money and equipment on how do I harden all of these entry
and
the doors.
Yeah.
Let me make these doors, you know, if you want to come into my door, you need to weigh yourself down to the gram and do all these crazy scenarios. And you had device level security and machine certificates and all these other crazy things. And as we've gone to the public cloud, we kind of have switched over to this, hey, if everything's in the public cloud, the default operating mode is everything I do should be secure. I should have SSL certificates on everything. I should have defense in depth. I should be using OMS and Security Center to look at things. Every one of my applications, even if it's traditionally an internal application where, hey, I know it's trusted, I don't need to worry about calls to it because I know that's a trusted system. Well, in the new world, a call to that system should still leverage an AAD token. We should essentially assume, let's secure everything and just default from an operating model of application development and everything to, let's just treat everything as we need to secure it. And mm-hmm. security is paramount, especially with how connected everything is nowadays. If we don't operate it in that model, it could potentially hurt us. So we default as we secure everything. Everything requires multi-factor authentication. Internal web servers should have SSL certificates on them. All of these just basics of security hygiene.
It's actually more secure up there than it was when we had it on premises, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. We've seen that migrating stuff up to the cloud thing makes things statistically more secure and statistically higher uptime. And so for us, it's a completely a win-win. And when we talk about kind of how we've modernized, networks and other things, we treat, we essentially say, hey, we use all the connectivity options. We use ExpressRoute for private peering into Azure. We also use ExpressRoute for Office 365 to give them faster access. Many of our business customers are doing this today. Hey, I want a little bit faster access to Office 365 in Azure. And then we try and migrate as many of our applications, if we can, over to the Azure public. So as we're developing new applications, you would see some of our line of business applications, the underlying URL is under a azurewebsites.net or a cloudapp.net. And so we're trying to migrate to public Azure so that way we can kind of go over front edges and not have to pay extra money for expensive VPN connections. If we're going to modernize, we try and modernize all the way, but we definitely use a good chunk of ExpressRoute for those things where it really just optimizes end user productivity and use case scenarios, and many of our customers are doing the same.
For our viewers, define what ExpressRoute is.
That's a great call out. We're so used to it here. An ExpressRoute is simply an MPLS VPN connection. Mm-hmm. And so many of our the major telcos in the world, if you want to host your, you would go to those telcos and say, hey, I want you to do some data co-location of my servers, but I still want them on my corporate network. And so those telcos would give you a VPN, a dark fiber VPN connection from your corporate network over to your hosting facility.
Oh, in this case, it would be the Microsoft Cloud.
Yep, and so for us,
it's an extension of your data center into our cloud.
It's an extension of our data center into the Azure cloud.
Okay.
So those assets that are sitting in there that are connected with that VPN connection, look, feel, you can ping them just as if they were on your private network.
Okay.
So it's really an extension. And I think when we look at all this modernization and we've talked about all of the things that we've done, we're, hey, let's move it to the cloud, let's look at these different things. I think it's kind of important to highlight what's happened to our people. Mm-hmm. We used to have, in traditional worlds, you had a DBA, you
yep.
had a security guy, you had a network guy. You had all of these very concrete, very narrowly defined skill sets.
Infrastructure guys.
Infrastructure guys, mm-hmm. How often did infrastructure guys talk to the security guys, talk to the network guys, talk to the application guys?
Talk?
Well, we talked. And it was always, we were always silos. And I think as we've migrated, for example, we now have weekly syncs with, our director level people. And for us, a director level person is somebody that could designs the networks at Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Their boss may not understand everything, but I know you're the one that designed how we're doing the networks and network policy. And so now we have, our security, our network, our operations support, and in applications people, we sync on a weekly basis, and we live in the same buildings now. And so as we're starting to learn how to do these things, we come up with really innovative policies around, hey, here's how we're gonna do a modern application DMZ to allow all these crazy things that maybe a year ago we would have balked at and said, we're not gonna allow that, but now we're all learning together.
We're too busy doing this stuff down below.
Yep, mm-hmm. And how can we make this environment perfect for an application developer that wants to modernize and not have to modernize to, I need this front edge LAN and then I need this DMZ to talk to this DMZ. How do we modernize together? And so it's been really fantastic. But what we've seen from that is you know, especially on the application side, our dev, test, you know, our QA, our application developers, our support, service engineering, they've all kind of morphed into, we're all working on the same application, we're all looking at the same Visual Studio Online, we're all using the same systems, and so we really kind of are able to up-level. So now our database people understand networks, our networked people understand applications more. Mm-hmm. Our application people understand you can't just like write code and it magically works, that there are still physics, especially when we look at multi-country applications where we have to distribute this application across the entire globe. And so it's really been fantastic. You know, there's a lot of, you know, melding of titles in, here's my title and I can, you know, I'm an infrastructure person, so I can do operations. But if you need me to speak deep level networking or security, mm-hmm. I may be able to do that too, and then we can provide a better experience for our customers.
Excellent. So it's less of a my job is going away than a my job is expanding.
Yeah.
Going up the OSI stack rather than staying down in the basement.
Yeah,
in the
that's a fantastic analogy. You know, when every time I talk to customers and they say, "Hey, you know, I'm afraid when we went from physicals to virtuals, everybody panicked.
Yep.
We're all going to lose our jobs." And when we look at the, you know, migrating to Azure, and people are like, "Oh my gosh, you're going to shut down all of these things." Well, no, now our engineers that are really great at performance on premise and things like that are now trying to figure out how do we architect stuff for the cloud that saves the company money, allows this application development team to deploy 90 times faster and have even better performance. And that requires them to upskill and learn more. And I think that's always a fantastic thing.
Isn't it?
Every day I come and I think, well, I don't know that, but I might know a little bit more at the end of the day. And so I think that's really the thing that, especially teams that are afraid to have this fear to say, you're still going to be doing really great things. Now you get to do things a little more fun because you get to play with more things in the cloud. It's more interesting. You know, you can say, I can go design an application instead of being for 200 servers on premise. I might scale out to 50,000 cores this month because we've launched this thing and it's going gangbusters. So it's really been interesting.
Great.
And if we kind of pull it back, I think we're today, and Jim has said this, we're really close right now to all of our non-production being in the cloud. And by the time we hit, you know, all of our non-production in the cloud, and we hit the vast majority of our production in the cloud, by the time we hit that, you know, in some time from now, whatever is left, because of how fast the Azure product group releases, whatever is left will be small, and it'll be something we can easily tackle.
Okay. So we have a question here. We'll kind of morph into the Q&A part. Is there a way to do chargeback to departments, and how do I set up reporting for that? I heard them talk about a showback model, but I need to do department chargeback while we set up Azure.
Yep. And so what we've done to address that, so it's a classic question because if you look at, you know, if we imagine you and I and we have a number of other people around the table, we should make them wave and go on camera. If we imagine we have a bunch of people here and we said, that's great, we're all a cost center, let's switch to a showback. That's great, that pulls a lot of things out of it, but let's say, you know, maybe my business is based on cost of goods sold. Mm-hmm. So I really do need to realize that impact. And so what we do today is we essentially centralize the bill to you. But then since each Azure subscription has, you know, a unique ID in it and we can see what they spent, if I needed that imputed cost and I said, hey, I need you to actually hit me with that and I need it to, it may be funny money within under the CEO, it's all funny money,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a business unit and then I need to get charged with that.
You
and
know so, what your cost
yeah,
of goods
we
is.
Essentially, because our Azure bill is broken down by subscriptions and subscription ID, and we've gotten away from this shared model, it's very easy for you to say, here's what you spent this month, here's your bill, I'm just going to pass the cost to you. I'm not going to mark it up, I'm not going to do all these funny things. I'm just going to pass the cost to you and essentially do an internal charge transfer. But it's really nice to do it that way. And I think when we first started out in this and we said, hey, let's have one Azure subscription for all of our stuff or a few Azure subscriptions for all of our stuff, when you get to that question also makes me think a lot of what the pain that we had there was we have 15 different groups or 200 different applications within this one subscription. Now it becomes, you know, BI and Excel and analytical Olympics to figure out, well, my bandwidth cost for these resources is all lumped together. How much bandwidth did you spend versus me? Mm-hmm. How much should I get charged? And it just, like, it gets really messy. And so I think when we switched over from that kind of model to, hey, a subscription per application per service, now the application owner knows exactly how much it costs that person to run their business. And then once they migrate to the cloud, they get out of the capital depreciation mm-hmm. bow waves that yep. are just absolutely crazy.
It's crippling, isn't it?
It's crippling, and then you have your organization looking at finance stuff when, yep. wait, I thought they were supposed to be building applications.
Right.
And so when we can move to the cloud, it's fantastic. It helps us to say, here's the actual cost of it, and now I can start doing the right thing.
Okay. So let's switch to the good, the bad, the ugly. Do you have any lessons learned? Did anything go south
Yeah.
During your migration?
And so I'd say there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I'd say the great thing that we've done is having our teams cross-discipline talk to each other has really allowed us to go a lot faster. Those teams where web fits perfectly, for example, e-commerce, all these things where they need to scale up, fan out, they migrated by themselves. They're like, hey, I can go a lot faster on this. I would say some of the things where we've had challenges where when we started our Azure journey, you know, obviously when you start something new, and you're trying to train all of Microsoft IT to think Azure and think cloud first.
Mm-hmm.
On day one, just because we work at Microsoft, we're not all certified Azure experts. We have a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the first applications we tried to migrate were some of our most complex. And that doesn't really help. Mm-hmm. When you don't have the ability to swim in a river. You're learning to swim in a river, and it's like, let's pick our small wins. Let's pick applications that, you know, maybe this is a really gnarly application and has these types of architectural characteristics. Let's pick something like that, but maybe a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not go after the 300 terabyte data lake that
right.
does crazy stuff like that. Let's go after the 2 terabyte data lake that does something
sure.
like that. And so I think really allowing your application teams and your infrastructure teams to go spend a little R&D money on Azure and go learn, you know, hey, here's how I use PowerShell to go provision infrastructure. Think of infrastructure as code.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? What does it look like when I go provision that infrastructure through Visual Studio? What does it look like when I provision it through a JSON template?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your application teams, let them go. Let understand that your teams are going to have to ramp up a little bit before they go after the hardest thing in the world. You don't start building a high-performance sports car when you start learning what a wheel is.
Right.
And don't try that.
So you mentioned thinking the cloud way. So that's obviously involves culture. It involves behavioral changes. What type of changes are those, and are they really necessary to get the benefits of the cloud?
It's like we kind of iterated on. It's getting people to think differently. It's getting people to share, hey, I migrated this application. I think communication here is probably one of the most important things. When we have monthly meetings, we have other things, we're heavy users of Yammer. And so when we have our experts, we call them cloud leads inside of Microsoft IT. These are application owners, teams within the application teams that really understand, they get cloud first. And so they're kind of the, hey, when I'm stuck, this is the person that I go to. Those teams talk to each other and help all the other portfolio application owners figure out what's next. And I think taking that approach and just saying, hey, who are my leaders? And then how do I empower each of those people to go take something and run with it? And how do I make sure that they're talking to the other people that get it? And how do we look at, you know, kind of like learning curves and adoption models of skills and abilities and make sure that you know who your people that are in the 2 standard deviations up that really understand? Make sure those people are talking to each other, make sure especially the across discipline they're talking mm-hmm. to each other, and then make sure that the next standard deviation down where you have the really early adopters and people that just kind of can learn faster and get it or are thinking cloud first, make sure all those people are constantly talking to each other.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously there's another group of people that are, I'm a line of business application owner. The only code that I look at has business objects and business names in it. They need to we don't need to necessarily say, hey, you need to learn the cloud or you can't function. There's no reason for that. But they may need to just go talk to their cloud lead and say, hey, if I'm going to go build this new application, you know, do I build it in Azure Data Lake or do I build it in this other system? Just help me do that. And then I'm back off and running in my application domain. And so I think it's really the culture change that we've seen is let's go faster. Let's be a lot more transparent. It's really nice that everybody's working in the same system. When one team says, hey, I've deployed this ARM template to do SQL always on in IaaS, and it has these ARM policy snippets attached to it to satisfy security, and then I've done these things, check into a repository, and then, hey, why shouldn't I be sharing that with the rest of the organization so we can share things?
Okay.
It's been a lot of fun. Sharing and transparency and talking to across discipline have been the biggest culture changes for us. And then everybody always just thinking, hey, mobile first, cloud first. You know, I don't always, a year from now, I don't want to have to carry this around to work everywhere. I shouldn't have to. I should be able to have a phone that can plug in or a phone that I can just set down and connect to wireless. I should be thinking that way because that's what I want to do when I go home.
Right.
And I should be thinking cloud first because that's a lot easier and faster to do things.
Okay. Well, it looks like we've drained all of the online questions and our time is almost up here. So I'd like to remind all of our viewers that we certainly appreciate your feedback and ask everyone watching to fill out the short survey in your Skype window. It's been great having Lyle here with us. Thank you, Lyle.
Thanks, Jim.
And we hope to see you at our next broadcast. As always, for more information and content on how Microsoft does IT, go to Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. Thank you.